Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Christopher and our musicians. It's important to remember to connect with our joy, especially now. Yeah. So I'm sitting there singing, joyful, joyful, but really this morning my heart, probably like yours, is heavy with the news of another shooting in Dayton, Ohio. A man wearing full body armor and carrying a huge gun. Just 13 hours after the shooting in Walmart in El Paso, and just days after the shooting at an outdoor festival in Gilroy. You know, it makes this month's topic, gratitude and appreciation for other nations and people, even more important to me. Our Science of Mind magazine, I think it was in 1992, published an article by our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, describing who we ought to be in the world as a result of our religion, our faith tradition. It says this: our religious outlook is a universal one. There is tolerance in its concept and inclusion because the infinite is all-embracing. So we work in harmony with all religious beliefs, since each is in his or her own way seeking the ultimate cause. And then this is the line: the one who understands the science of mind, that's our teaching, will be tolerant, kind, and sympathetic. Well, I've been stuck on that line. You know, tolerance. It's good, I suppose. And today I'm wondering if we can do better. You know, tolerance means being willing to allow something, even when I don't like it, or I don't want it, or don't agree with it. That's good, as far as it goes. And I wonder if we can do better than that. I wonder if Dr. Ernest Holmes were alive today and hearing the same news that we are hearing today, I wonder if he would expand on the concept of tolerance. I think he would. I'm guessing that he would invite us, the students of science of mind, you know, the ones who study oneness and gratitude and compassion. I'm guessing that he would ask us if tolerance goes deep enough. I'm guessing it doesn't, not for the one who practices science of mind. I think he would invite us to go way further than tolerating differences. I'm guessing he would suggest that we rejoice in them because they are the natural state of the universe. It's just what is. I'm thinking he would ask us to celebrate the diversity of creation and to be curious about our world and not afraid of it. After all, our science of mind teaching is all about that. It's all about oneness, and it's about how from the oneness comes the many and how holy that is. It's about the thread of divinity that connects us all to each other and to everything, and it's about the connecting power of loving kindness. It's about the sacredness of life, and it's about the equalness of that sacredness in all, and it's about the power that we have to help or to harm. Now, as I get clearer and clearer on what my chosen spiritual path is all about, then it must also become clearer to me that such things as racism and sexism and xenophobia, the fear of people who are different, and all of the other phobias of society can't be in alignment with what I'm learning in Science of Mind. So for me, a student of Science of Mind, tolerance may not be enough. Oh, it's a good starting point. Yet as my interest in living a spiritual life grows, a life that is deeply rooted in principle, the more I want to go past tolerance, deeper. You see, because it occurs to me, I can tolerate somebody I hate. But that doesn't make me a practicing religious scientist. And when I abandon hate to the best of my ability, tolerance becomes less and less useful. So I rework that last sentence for me to expand it a little to say the one who understands Science of Mind will be inclusive and loving and compassionate. And I can go on, I can add appreciative and curious and welcoming and fearless and helpful and caring and life-affirming. And you can probably add many, many more. And as we add to it, checking all the time if what we are coming up with is consistent with the teaching of radical oneness. Now, when I claim this is my chosen spiritual path, then I can take a stand for that unashamedly and say, yes, I believe in the power of love-fueled thought. Yes, I believe that change for the better can come when we raise up our vision to a greater yet to be. Yes, I believe that we can create together a world that works better for everyone and a world that does better than tolerate. Oh, to take a stand for that. We have been very cautious about taking a stand in our movement. We haven't really boldly proclaimed this is who we are. And I wonder about the reason for that cautiousness. My therapist says that I am conflict avoidant. I get it. You know, I like to maintain positive relationships with people. I like to be seen as the nice guy, the good one, the harmonious person. I don't like to rock the boat. The problem I'm learning with that is that when something happens, you know, something that I don't like, and even though I saw it coming, but I don't say anything because I like to avoid conflict, then when it happens, I realize my avoidance helped it happen. I became part of the problem. When I didn't speak what I stand for, I can see that now. I think our movement, Centers for Spiritual Living, may be a little conflict avoidant sometimes. We're very, very cautious about taking a stand. You know, I don't know, maybe we're worried somebody will disagree. Somebody won't feel included. So we like to maintain a very positive atmosphere, and we like to be seen as the good spiritual people, the harmonious ones. And we're learning the problem with that is the same as it appears in personal life. When something happens, no one will know what we stand for unless we say so. Clearly, kindly, compassionately, and when we don't say what we stand for, we might inadvertently become supporters of the way things are. Looking around for support and inspiration from colleagues, I read this statement by one of my colleagues, and I could just feel the pain in the words, but I admire that she took a position. My biggest fear right now is that we as a nation are getting used to the mass shootings and letting them become normal. There are no simplistic solutions, but we need to tackle the issue. Eyes and ears and hearts wide open. This isn't right. And we need to demand that our leaders address all the components of this situation. And we can't let anyone off the hook because of finger pointing and budget constraints. If it's not safe to go to an outdoor festival, a mall, or Walmart, for God's sake, then we're not the land of the free. If we can't speak up and demand our safety, we aren't the home of the brave. Oh, man, I may be conflict avoidant. I may be conflict avoidant, but I sure like to know where other people stand. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it emboldens me. I like that, you know. So I'm learning that disagreement isn't a terrible thing. People can disagree and still love each other. Who knew? Disagreement is survivable. But being shot at a festival or at a bar or in Walmart, it turns out, is lethal. Maybe, and I say this respectfully, and I might be wrong, but maybe our movement is sometimes conflict avoidant because of something that our founder taught us. He said that we are to stand for something and against nothing. Well, I've been thinking about that. And I think we could be better, much better, at being for something, anything. You know, coming out with what we are for, or at least getting clearer on how our faith tradition, the science of mind, teaches us to respond to this world's issues. And we don't have to all agree or have the same opinion. But I think we do, every one of us, have to ask the same questions, like, what does this teaching of oneness and compassion and love call me to take a stand for? How does my faith tradition, the science of mind, promote liberty and justice for all? Many, many, many years ago, our movement, Centers for Spiritual Living, had its conference in Chicago. And one of the topics on the table for discussion was whether or not we, as a movement, should make a statement of support in favor of same-gender marriage. The statement was defeated. Some people, including some spiritual leaders in the movement, objected to the statement. Some expressed that they feared losing membership if we were to make such a statement. Some said it was political and that we should have nothing to do with politics. And in that moment, we didn't stand for anything. To avoid conflict, disagreement. And by not making a statement, we communicated something very strongly to those who were affected. We tolerate you. And we tolerate what's happening to you. That's why I think tolerance doesn't go far enough, not for me. And it makes me ask the question of myself, what am I promoting, allowing, permitting when I don't take a stand for oneness, for unity, for love? What am I promoting if I ignore those who are unnecessarily oppressed or marginalized or maligned? Am I in that moment being an embodiment of what Science of Mind teaches? I have to find that out. See, when that statement at the conference for same-gender marriage was defeated, I was heartbroken. When our movement failed to make a supportive statement, I couldn't believe it was happening. Good news, though, you know, fast forward to today, you know, Centers for Spiritual Living has come out with a bright and bold and unambiguous statement of affirmation and support for the LGBTQI community, which would be in alignment with all of our statements. Yeah. Still, what happened? What stopped us those years back? What got in the way of us taking a stand back then? Well, one of the reasons I mentioned was people said it was political. The topic's political, and churches and spiritual centers should have nothing to do with politics. Well, here's something to chew on from Mahatma Gandhi in his autobiography. Those who say religion has nothing to do with politics do not know what religion is. Whoa. I think there are some misunderstandings about what it is okay for us to talk about in spiritual centers. You know. So I'd like to help clear that up. The law does not prohibit a spiritual center from taking a stand, not just on marriage, but on racism, sexism, xenophobia. It is not illegal to talk about it. It is not even illegal to talk about our government leaders. It's not prohibited. Indeed, some people might say that it is the moral duty of spiritual communities to explore these topics, especially in the light of their spiritual teaching, to ask ourselves, in our case, how does the Science of Mind cause me to show up for these topics? To ask, if oneness had an opinion about racism, what would it be? To ask, if unconditional love did something about homophobia or any one of the phobias of society, what would it do? To ask, if infinite all-inclusive wisdom of the divine had a voice, what would it say? And what would it say through me? And then to listen. Because if it says to hate, it isn't Science of Mind. If it says to not care, it isn't Science of Mind. If it says to take care of self first above others, it isn't Science of Mind. If it says to lie, it isn't Science of Mind. If it says to live in fear, it isn't Science of Mind. If it says to ignore those who are unnecessarily oppressed or marginalized or maligned or killed, it's not Science of Mind. To take a stand means, for me, then, I've got to learn how to talk about these issues with people who disagree. And to do that, oh, I've got to manage my conflict avoidance. You know, I got to manage my fear of disagreement. So I went on to Psychology Today. Dr. Leanne Davey has got some tips for the conflict avoidant. And these are framed for the business environment, for teams in business. But as I read them to you, imagine that these suggestions are for a conversation you might be having about human rights or about any one of the issues facing our world. The first suggestion the doctor makes is to express your contrary opinion as an "and." She says it's not necessary for someone else to be wrong for you to be right. For example, "I hear that you think we need to leave room in the budget for a customer event, and I'm concerned that we need that money for employee training. What are our options?" See, I can get behind that. Her second suggestion, just for me, use hypotheticals. She says, if you don't feel comfortable about being assertive, and I don't, try asking your teammates to imagine a different scenario. "I hear," she gives an example, "your concern about getting the right salespeople to pull off this campaign. If we did get the right people, what would the campaign look like?" See, I can get behind that. Third, talk about the impact of actions. Rather than disagreeing with the plan, help your teammates think about the consequences by asking good open-ended questions about the impact. She gives an example. "Okay, we're contemplating launching this product to only our U.S. customers. How is that going to land with our two big customers in Latin America?" I can get behind that. And fourth, ask about the underlying issue. If you disagree with a proposed action, start with the discussion by trying to understand the rationale. If you understand the reason for the action, you might be able to find another way to accomplish the goal. "Oh, these are some good strategies for me. I can tell I'm going to use them right away to stop avoiding talking about what's happening in our nation, so I can explore my stand. And at the same time, I can see that I need to continue to get clearer on my spiritual beliefs and how they inform me to speak to the matters in this world. So I'm practicing like that. I'm learning, for example, to embrace differences in culture, in society, in people, and to work through my fear of disagreement because I believe in the oneness of all life. I believe there is a benevolent power in the universe that you and I can use to make a positive change, and so I'm not losing hope for my nation. Instead, I'm committed, recommitting to embrace this idea of a world that works better for everyone, as complicated as that might be. I'm learning to align my language and my feelings with love, even in very difficult, challenging conversations, because I believe love is the ultimate nature of reality, and that my work, our work, is to reveal that love exactly where it appears to be not present. I believe that there is something intrinsically good about people and that freedom is the birthright of every individual. So I must advocate for those who cannot advocate for themselves. I believe the divine reality is infinite. And so I must be encouraged to stop being afraid that there isn't enough. Not enough love, not enough caring, not enough decency to help each other. I got to stay with it. And I believe that forgiveness is one of the most significant ways to practice compassion. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to practice forgiving myself and other people for missteps and huge errors. And I believe in the power of words. So I will not minimize the effects of words used cruelly to divide and separate and disturb. Instead, I'm going to realign myself and continue to speak words into this world that clarify what I stand for and what I believe in and who I am. So I invite you to take a moment with me for some spiritual practice. To breathe in, to let your eyes close if you feel comfortable. As I settle into this moment, I bring my awareness to the serene knowledge that Spirit is present. I am deliberately attuning my mind to that beautiful, enduring, eternal One. Sitting in this awareness, then, I open myself to the peace that I know is present. I open to the divine love that I know permeates everything. Spirit is present fully and completely, now and always. This Spirit, the Spirit of peace and truth, is at the center of my life. It is what operates in my consciousness and in my heart. It is what moves me. I can say, it is who I truly am. Whether I know it or can see it, or understand it, I affirm that that is the case, not only for me, but for all beings, all sentient beings. In this moment, I accept that the Spirit of peace is at the center of all life, everywhere present. The peace of Spirit comes into clear focus in my mind right now. I feel it. I yield to it. from this peaceful place of knowing the presence of Spirit. I accept for myself and for all people an awareness of love accompanying me every step of the way, of an intuitive knowing of what to do and where to go. I claim for all the ability to look beyond the small self to the great truth that is emerging in my awareness right now. I reclaim for all the ability to know oneness. I reclaim for everyone clarity in thought and decision making, especially for those in power. I am so grateful for this moment of consciousness, to have the luxury of time to look inward, to lift up my spiritual vision, to move past the appearances of this world, and to know that these words, these ideas, and these feelings in this prayer are heard and received and acted upon by the spiritual laws of the universe right now. I bring this moment of prayer, of spiritual mind treatment, to a close by releasing this word I have spoken into the law of mind, that aspect of the divine that is paying attention to us, through us, and through the creative power that it is, bringing into manifestation a higher vibration of harmony and connection. I'm so grateful to remember to let this word go, because I of myself do not know how to accomplish that which the divine in us accomplishes. And so I call this prayer answered even before I see the evidence. And I let it be and say, and so it is. I invite you to take a deep breath in with me and to sigh. We use breath to change gears in our service from one spiritual practice to the other. The spiritual practice of circulation has many aspects to it, including appreciation, which means to raise in value. I love that word, appreciate, to raise in value. So as the ushers come around and you make your gift, I invite you to raise in value not only the act of giving in your own estimation, elevate your act of giving to something holy, and also your center for spiritual living. Elevate it in your thought. Raise it up to be a beacon of light for those who may be hurting. I invite the ushers to stand. Will you please take your gift in your hand, or if you gave electronically, place your hand on your chest as a symbol of your heart connection to your giving, and say after me, I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.